This is Suzette Grelot. What follows is the audio of my conversation with OU Regent Rinzai Stone, which occurred on February 21st, 2018. You can hear the conversation in its entirety. For a transcript of the conversation, please contact us at connect@onourcamp.us.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. Just working at home, been on calls all morning long, I'm sure. I'm sorry. I was just leaving you a message letting you know that I'm sorry I couldn't get to you this morning because I've just bounced from one phone call to another all morning since we're stuck at home. So,
yeah.
Are you there?
Are you there?
There, I think.
Oh, okay.
Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I said, turns out I don't think it's great outside. I think it's Leanne just went to our school actually. Up the kids and she said it's terrible.
Yeah, we're completely covered in ice down here in Norman, so I mean everything, it's just sleeting like crazy, so yeah, it's good to stay inside.
Well, I had a great meeting yesterday with Kirk and Ursula.
Good.
And I don't know if you know, but Leanne and our boys and I are going to spend a week, May 15th through 22nd, in Arezzo, and we're so excited about it.
Yeah, that's great. I'd heard that you were coming, and you'll be there at a time when there are a lot of students there, and so that'll be good for you to see. And everybody's excited for you to see the facility. It's just amazing. You'll have a great time.
We're so excited, and I told Kirk and Ursula, and maybe this is something for you to think of also, but I'd really like to understand the long-term potential and vision for what we can do there, and I don't know if that's a presentation or if that's like a meeting or, you know, I want to see it, but intuitively, I think I'm one of the people that just thinks that this is, and you remember from when I was on the board, this is such a positive thing, that investment that we've made, and the world is becoming more global every day, and Oklahoma is one of the most insular places out there, and so this thing is already so successful, and I want to be, not all the regions, I think, probably understand it, and I want to make sure that I'm a champion for it. And so,
well, I'd really appreciate that. I'm happy to provide you whatever information I've been offering Rinzai, quite frankly, for years to Nick Hathaway and President Bourne and others, to be able to provide information to the board that makes the case for these types of centers. So, I mean, I've got whatever you need. I'm happy to present to you whatever you want and help you make the case and be a champion for Arezzo, for study abroad in general, for any other center. But certainly, if your interest is mainly Arezzo, then, you know, I'm happy to provide you whatever you need. I've got all the ammunition, if you will, to make that case. So just let me know when you need it and what you need exactly.
Well, I know we're late to the game in terms of what OU has done versus a lot of the other top-tier public universities and private. And I know that, you know, I'm in favor of any kind of study abroad, but, you know, the Arezzo program, because that's where our biggest physical investment, mm-hmm. fiscal investment lies, capital investment, that's what I was looking for, lies. I want to make a case for how important it is, mm-hmm. and just to plant a seed with you. I think a year from now, in June of 2019, I think there's some interest on the board at maybe having our board retreat at Arezzo.
Great.
I need to probably take this entire year and start talking about the program, and I think it's also a good thing for the new president. I think it's going to be something that they're going to immediately see as an opportunity to, anyway. So I just want us to you know, be thinking about that. And I'm sure I'm going to be impressed when I'm there and all that. So.
Well, I'm, like I said, I have everything ready to do that. I've been making the case for it for a long time. So I'm happy to provide you whatever you need. And I'm thrilled to hear that the board would be going together, because there are a number of the members of the board that haven't been. And so I would love to see them go and, you know, engage, particularly when students are there, and see, you know, the impact. So just anytime, you just tell me what it is you need and when you want it, and I'm happy to provide it.
I think anytime before I leave, which okay. I'm leaving on April 28th, you know, whether it's you emailing me a presentation or a fact sheet,
okay.
I just want to make sure as I'm experiencing it firsthand, uh-huh. I want to make sure that I'm trying to understand the vision for the future as well as the facts about uh-huh. the facility.
Okay.
So,
well, that's great. I mean, I can definitely pull together everything that I can tell you in terms of, like, factually, like, you know, the numbers of students that have gone through, the kind of response that we've gotten, the kind of programs we're doing, all of that kind of detail I can put together in a presentation for you very easily and quickly. So I'll be happy to do that and send that to you. As far as the long-term vision of Arezzo, I really would love to have that conversation. And again, have attempted in the past to have a conversation with President Bourne and others about the long-term vision regarding growing beyond the student mission. Obviously, our number one mission, our number one priority is to serve our students. And we have, you know, 500 students going through Arezzo every year. So that's our priority. But there are a number of other things that we've contemplated and considered doing. Everything from, you know, community projects and, you know, revenue generating programming and all the kinds of, you know, other things we can get into to help, you know, grow the investment, I guess, if you will, and return on that investment financially. I mean, I think we've got a lot of return on investment that's not calculable, right? We've got a lot of return on this investment that just goes into student experience and growth and development and all of that stuff that you cannot calculate and you can't put a dollar figure on. But I think there are other things that we can do in terms of, you know, actually generating more revenue out of the place. But it's been made clear to me in the past that that really wasn't what we were here to do, that, you know, any attempts that we had made to try to grow in that area was we were, you know, asked respectfully to not do that. And so I think that, you know, with transition in leadership, I think maybe there will be more opportunity to do something like that. And I've already got many plans and many ideas of where that would go, where you know, we could go, with keeping in mind that, you know, students have to come first. I mean, our student mission has to come first. But beyond that, there are all kinds of things we could do. But of course, some of it would also require some additional investment, right, in order to, you know, get a larger return on that investment. And I'm talking largely about person power, because our staff there is already very stretched to the limit of serving our student mission. So if we're going to do anything that requires, or that would, anything that would push us beyond that mission, if that is the vision, because I think we're pretty close to tapping out on student mission, right? I mean, we only have so much capacity, and there's only, you know, so many students that you can and will see go through Arezzo. So in that case, if you're tapping out that, then you've got to look at, you know, what are the opportunities beyond the student mission? Then you start having to think about, well, where do you have to invest to be able to grow in that area if you want to grow in that area? And that's, I guess, you know, I'm 110% prepared to do all of that. I just can't do that, you know, without guidance from, of course, the president, and, you know, some sort of support from the board. So, you know, whenever there is a, you know, time or opportunity, or an interest in having that conversation, you know, I'm again ready for it.
Well, I don't make the decision on the retreat, but we talked about it a year ago, mm-hmm. and this year, because of everything going on, wasn't the right year. Mm-hmm. It'll be Leslie Rainbolt's call on it. Mm-hmm. And obviously it'll require everybody on the board, also agreeing that it was a good idea. But I think it's in play, and that if you'll keep that in the back of your head, it gives you a runway of 16 months to be thinking mm-hmm. about that. Because I plan on, assuming I get over there and just, see what I'm anticipating seeing. As I'm such a supporter of what we've been doing at International Studies. Let's figure out how to maybe do it.
Okay. So great. Happy to help in any way.
All right. You want to talk? Can we talk a little bit about the letter and the process and
sure.
what's happening and
sure.
what's not happening? And
absolutely.
So, I mean, Suzette, I guess when I read your letter, I thought to myself, man, I wish she had just called me because we have a relationship. And I don't know what kind of relationship you have with the other regents.
None.
I'm a big fan of you and your program, and I just love everything about what we're doing in your area. And so I guess when I read the deal, I was a little bit taken aback because I'm such a big fan. And then B, it felt to me from the seat I'm sitting in as completely uninformed about what we're doing and not thinking, not knowing how it's happened. And so my purpose of reaching out was I hope to just share with you what's happening so you can hear it from somebody who's in the center of it. And then, I have a point of view on why what's happening is happening, of which I'm one of seven people who has a voice, and there are a lot of strong voices, but I think I've got a voice. I think all of us are following what I think I'm going to tell you is the approach. But does that sound okay if I kind of filled you in from that perspective?
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to hear what you have to say, but very quickly in response to your response to the letter, let me first be very clear that it may have come across as my letter because I'm the executive administrator that was involved in it, but it was a collective letter and reflecting the sentiment of many people, not just me, and that was in response to an attempt to and not attempts, yes, and then also response to the information that had already been shared regarding the search, everyone was responding to. So it wasn't, you say it was uninformed, but I mean, it was informed by all of the information that was available to us collectively. I have not had one conversation with, any member of the board, any member of the administration. I mean, this search is not discussed at all, collectively and as a group and as a group of leaders of a public institution. And so it seems to me that, the group that was expressing significant concern about the process was responding from their seat and their view, mine included, in terms of what we see happening and our, desire to see something happen or to see a different path taken here for all the reasons we spelled out. So, I mean, that's just kind of you know, to kind of clarify that. And then, you know, I'm happy to hear, I'd love to hear, you know, a perspective from the inside, in terms of why, transparency, particularly in the final stages is either not going to happen or is not wanted or desired or appropriate.
Well, and I heard everything that you said, and I think you definitely raised some valid points, and there were some valid points raised in the letter. And I guess to me, the letter, the language in the letter represented a huge lack of trust in the Regents and lack of confidence in our ability to manage the process. And I guess the thing that I could tell you about the process is this thing is like threading a needle, and there are 1,000 ways to screw it up. And we feel, every single person that's serving on the Regents feels an unbelievable amount of pressure and responsibility to do this right. And to complicate matters, President Bourne, for all of his positives, absolutely refused at any stage over the last 23 years to engage in any sort of succession planning. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, the Board of Regents found out about him resigning at the same time the public did. So this was not a well-orchestrated, well-planned out, well-thought-through transition. Although he definitely dropped hints that, you know, maybe it was coming time soon. So we kind of started as a group behind the eight ball in that we, you know, any other governing board, and I'm in my third year, and in my first meeting, I raised my hand and said, where's the succession plan? Any other governing board, would be hung for not having some sort of plan should the executive, who's the, you know, the chair, the CEO, the president, step down. And our board did not do that. And so part of that's on us and part of that's on President Bourne. So that's where we started. Now, the process that we're following, you know, we had lots of ideas about the process, including more people and including less people being involved. And at the end of the day, Suzette, the path that we chose was the path that the previous Board of Regents used to select the current president. And that path limited our ability to source candidates. It limited our ability to vet candidates early in the process. It limited our ability to screen out people that maybe we thought shouldn't be a part of the process for whatever political or other reason. And the process we chose was a inclusive representation of the university community. And it was the same process that the previous Regents used to select our current president. And so from my seat, I've interviewed no candidates. I haven't met with the search firm. I know I'm going to be getting a slate of candidates to interview. And we are all so terrified at being accused of not being inclusive that we've gone above and beyond in our mind to have a vetted process that's already been used and use a representation of the university community, which is which could be potentially unruly at 17 people. And, you know, where do you stop it? Is 30 the right number? Is 40 the right number? We talked about these things. And so as best I can tell, the thing we were afraid of being accused of is now what we're being accused of when we can't figure out how we could have done it any better than what we've done it right now in terms of following a process that had worked previously at this university. One other point, and then I'll hear what you kind of have to say about it. The second thing is the idea of naming, and I've read several books and all the papers I can get my hands on. We all have. I've spent 50 hours on governance and process because I don't want to get it wrong. And there is about 50-50. 50% of the papers and books say, if you don't keep it confidential, you're not going to get the pool of candidates and you're not going to get a great president. And then the other 50% say, if you don't parade them down Main Street and let every single person up from the university community poke at them, you're never going to have legitimacy. And both of them are right. And so what we have decided is David Boren, who we consulted with, would not have accepted the University of Oklahoma position if he was a top three candidate. It just wouldn't have happened. And the example that I would use for you is, what if we're interviewing Rex Tillerson? I'm not saying we're interviewing Rex Tillerson. He's not on the list. But I just am coming up with a big name. You know, Rex Tillerson's the current Secretary of State. And let's say that we had him on the hook, and for whatever reason, the regents just think that he would be fantastic. I don't think he'd be fantastic. I'm just saying, what if he was? And you could make this about 10 different really public people. The president of the University of Texas, or the chancellor of the University of Texas, you can make that statement about them too. I can't figure out if we have a representative group of people who are vetting, interviewing, in a process that is secure and not being influenced or meddled with from the regents. They pass up, you know, call it five candidates for us to interview. And we do all of the due diligence through our governance, through this representative group. I just don't see why that is such a horrible outcome for us. And I hate to lose on a candidate like David Boren, because we want to parade everybody down Main Street, people that have great jobs and presumably, you know, don't want everybody to know their business. So anyway, that's kind of my reaction. And that's what I would have told you before the letter came out. It seems to me in my chair, very reasonable. Again, I understand the lack of, you know, I'm a communications person and this board is not great at communications. I think there are some fair complaints made about information being shared, and I think we can address some of those, but you now hear my concern.
Well, Renzo, I mean, I fully appreciate your position, and let me just say that, you know, the letter in its final statement said that we really appreciate the service, of course, of President Boren, of the Board of Regents, and the search committee, and we know that you have a very difficult job. Okay. I mean, I've been saying this, people have been saying this for a long time. What a terrible, difficult job it's going to be when this day comes, right? So everybody knows that you have a terrible and difficult job ahead of you and you're trying to get it right. Nobody is suggesting that you're not trying to get it right. Okay. I don't think that's, please don't think that anyone thinks you're trying to get it wrong, because that's not the case. And I'm just going to speak personally here, because again, I think my voice has come out on top of all of this because of my position. But you know, this was a collective effort, but I'm going to say some things to you right now that are really just kind of my personal response and reaction to your comments, which I fully appreciate. First, let me just, in reference to, this is a process that worked before when it selected President Boren. 25 years ago, 24 years ago, higher ed was in a much different place than it is today. Yep. The University of Oklahoma is in a much different place than it was today. In many, many ways, it is in a much, much better position than it's ever been. In some ways, it's much, much, much more challenging than it's ever been. This is a different world that we're living in higher ed today than we were 25 years ago. So to suggest that we should use the same process and procedure that worked 25 years ago is, to me, immediately flawed, because it's not taking into consideration the significant changes that have happened in higher ed over the last 25 years.
So I agree. And I think all of us wanted to do it differently. However, at least the thinking of our group was, we will be criticized. If we have 21 people, it should have been 22. If we have 50 people, it should have been 49. You know, if we just do it ourselves, we should have had a lot more. And so it was less about the right number, and it was more about, we will be criticized no matter how we run this process. There will be people that think that we had too many people, not enough. You know, do we want every dean, or do we just want a few deans? Do we want 5 students, or should we have 10 students? And so what is the right process that everybody can agree on? And we didn't change it, because the only defensible process we could come up with was the one that had worked before. Even if it was flawed, it came with a great result. And so I agree with you. I wish we had completely changed it.
I think we're kind of talking about two different things here, because to be honest, I think no one is quibbling with the number of people on the search committee or the number of people that were here or there. I don't think anybody's quibbling with that at all. I think what the concern is that in the final stages of this process, the process is that the regents, you know, the search committee has done its work in secret. And then the search committee will hand on, you know, its work produced in secret to a board that will then produce its work in secret. I think it's that fundamental problem, not how many people, who do they represent? Because at the end of the day, all of us should be represented in some way, or at least have had an opportunity to have a voice. And I know people say, well, there were these, you know, open forums, and there was the opportunity to tell the search committee, look, don't even get me started on the role of the search firm in all of this. The search firm, a private company who has a certain incentive to produce a certain outcome, and it serves their private interests to keep all of this confidential. And there's a long, long history and literature documenting the way in which search firms, you know, don't really serve the interest of the institution. They're serving their own interests, and there's a lot of kind of perverse incentives that they have to influence that outcome. Now, I don't know, again, the inside situation. I'm just looking at, you know, the fundamental research on the role of search firms. But that being left aside, the process really does matter here. And the fact that decisions are going to be made behind closed doors, whether it was with 17 people or 27 people or 137 people, right, is really what's at issue. Now, let me also suggest this. Even though President Boren was hired through a process that was closed, right? Everyone, I wasn't here then, right? I didn't come to OU until 1999. So I wasn't here. I wasn't a part of it. I don't know anything about it. But people that were here at the time said that his candidacy for the presidency was about, and this is how somebody put it to me, as secret as a sunrise. It was not a secret. It was not confidential. He was clearly in the running. He was clearly scoping it out. He came to campus several times. He met with people. There were meetings. There were discussions. It was an open secret that he was going to become president of the University of Oklahoma. So it's not that. So that kind of process where it was like, you know, I'm leaving the specifics of President Boren aside, because he's a wonderful leader, a wonderful man, has done many things that are great, including my own college and international education. This is not personal. This is a matter of that the perception that back then was that it was cooked in the direction of a particular candidate, and it wasn't a secret at all. And then that's the perception you get now, is that there's a cooking of the situation, a cooking of the process, that it's not real, that it's not open, that it's not going to be inclusive. And so what then results is a tremendous amount of mistrust and a significant amount of cynicism about the not only the process, but growing on, Renzo, I have to be honest with you, this cannot come as a surprise to you, a significant amount of cynicism about how this administration has worked for years, right? I mean, it's been a secretive process that goes well beyond the whole, I'm not going to talk about succession. You know, it's so this is all building and building. It's not directed at the regents necessarily. It's, you know, it's not directed at any one particular thing. It's an overall sense of concern for the future of this institution and the work of this institution and the people here and the students here and how this process is not serving their needs. And so then there's that. And then let me just say one last thing. I agree that in at least the early stages of a process, right, early stages of any high-level executive search, confidentiality is critical to, you know, having conversations with people. I understand that fully. But when you get to a final round, when you get to, I'm really interested in this person and this person and this person, and I really want to see which one is the best fit and the best leader for our institution, then the interest should shift from the candidate and protecting the candidate and protecting the secrecy, you know, the confidentiality of that candidate, to the interests of the institution. That's just my, you know, my feeling about that, is that we don't sacrifice the interests of the institution and everybody at, you know, on campus and involved in this community at the expense, you know, we protect the confidentiality of the candidate at the expense of that community in that final round, in that final stage. Because, again, that person's going to just fight an uphill battle, right? From day one, that person's going to be fighting an uphill battle to win a sense of you know, legitimacy, to be seen as a legitimate leader. There's not been a process that has vetted, you know, them in a more public way. And I guess my last feeling about that, I know I've got a lot of feelings about this, but here's what I think. If you're a serious candidate for anything, like if you're Rex Tillerson, if you're this or that or the other thing, then if you're so afraid of being exposed in that final round, and if you're so embarrassed if you don't get it, then what kind of leader are you really? You know, I mean, I think our leaders need to be confident, they need to be bold, they need to be courageous, right? This is a tough, tough job, a very tough job. And how can you legitimately say that your best candidates are the ones that won't let any light shine upon them until they are selected because they're afraid of being embarrassed or they're afraid of being undermined?
I guess it's really discounting the people. It's discounting the representation of the people that are working on it, doesn't it? I mean, the 17 plus the 7, the 24 people who have the university's best interests in mind, who have diverse backgrounds, who have diverse experiences, who have lots of different engagement and roles within the university community, doesn't that discount their work? And then, you know, I would also say, so what is that transparency? I mean, is it town halls with multiple candidates in front of everybody? Is it, you know, sitting down with each dean and having each dean say yes or no based on whatever 30 minutes or hour they get with them? I mean, what is a transparent process, you know, that makes sense, that makes any sense?
Okay, so as far as like discounting the role of those who've been put in a place to run this process, I think that your search committee and your board are trusted entirely to run the process and weed out candidates that they do not think are going to be appropriate leaders for this institution. I don't think anyone is claiming that there should be, you know, rule by committee of the community, rule by community from day one. I think we all understand that there is a process that begins with a committee and the board, you know, weeding out the candidates that aren't going to be the best ones and presenting to us those that they think will be the best ones, right? And that's your job and that we trust you to do that. I chaired the provost search, if you recall, right? The provost search. And I mean, I thought that that type of process where you have a large representative committee that reviews all of the materials and discusses with all of the all of the potential candidates, you know, their strengths and weaknesses and all the things they can bring to the table, and then you identify, you know, your finalists, the people that you really are serious about and the people who are really serious about you. And if they're really serious about you, they'll come to campus. They'll come and they'll have an open conversation, because if they won't do that, then they're not really serious about our job. They aren't really serious, then they aren't the kind of leaders we need. But then you have an opportunity, right? You get them onto campus, and yeah, you have a town hall, you have a public forum, you have an opportunity for that candidate to say, here's why I want to come here, and here's why you want me. Right. Here are all the things that I see going on here. Here are the challenges, the opportunities, the strengths, the incredible things that you're doing, the things that I would bring to the table, all that stuff. I mean, to me, this isn't rocket science. Right. And then everybody has the opportunity to give you feedback. Right. Just like we did with the provost search. We sent out a huge survey afterwards and said, send us your thoughts. And then the committee went through them. And then the committee made a recommendation to the person who makes the decision. And that was the president. People can make a recommendation to the board and the board makes the decision. I don't think anybody's suggesting that the board wouldn't ultimately finally decide, but that you would be completely, you know, you would have complete information and you wouldn't be immediately undermining a leader that was chosen behind closed doors. So, yeah. I mean, I think that's the position from our seats, you know, is that's not a lot in our opinion. That's not a lot to ask. We spend a lot of time and effort, you know, blood, sweat and tears. And I know you do too. I know the board does too. I know everybody commits a lot to this institution, but it also discounts the blood, sweat, and tears that are put in by, you know, students, faculty, staff on a daily basis down here on across our campuses or whatever, you know, and on behalf of the state of Oklahoma, to not have that opportunity to know who our potential leader might be at the end of the day.
You know, so we announce, here are the three candidates. One of them is a big name. They pull out immediately because mm-hmm. it affects their current job, and the risk of losing their current job mm-hmm. does surpass mm-hmm. them possibly taking mm-hmm. a job with us.
And
you say, you know,
so be it.
They need. Yeah, so be it. Okay.
Absolutely. So, because again, I mean, maybe there's something I'm missing, but we don't need or want wimpy leaders. We don't want or need leaders that are so afraid of what might happen in their other job that they are unwilling to compete for this one. And personally, I think it's an overall culture that needs to change, right? I mean, it's an overall sense of,
well,
I mean,
no
really,
question.
You know, I mean,
I think you and I agree with that. I mean, one of my absolute criteria is somebody with an independent, fresh vision for the future of the university. And when I have a chance to interview the candidates, that will be one of the key things that I put forward. You know, and
right. But you need multiple ears on those answers, Renzike. I mean, I think,
but,
you know,
that's the problem, Suzette, is where do you start and stop that? And I mean, I'm sitting here at my desk, sitting here thinking, where can this group, where can these regents, where can we compromise and give the faculty address some of their concerns in a way that doesn't, you know, that doesn't harm what we're trying to achieve. I mean, let's say I was a candidate. I'm not. But let's say I was a candidate. I run a business that has 55 people that work for me. You know, we have multi-million dollars of revenues and call it 50 clients. You know, to be a finalist and be announced, even for me, and I'm not a big name, I'm just a guy. You know, it's a major risk in my life that I may just say, you know, I don't have to be dragged through the dirt, mm-hmm. which is potentially what could happen in this process, even if you've lived a perfect existence, mm-hmm. to be dragged through the ringer and then not to get the job, all in the name of getting buy-in from the community. The whole thing just reeks of a lack of trust, which, by the way, you're right. There is a lack of trust, and it's sowed by David and how he's governed for the last 23 years. And you're right about that. I know that because your search, I was appointed to that search committee, and you know what I was instructed? We're looking for somebody that looks a lot like Kyle Harper.
Yeah.
That's what was instructed to me.
Exactly.
And so that's not the search we're running. In fact, it's the opposite of what we're running. And I use that as an example with the Regents. Said, I'm not going to be a part of something like that. And whether Kyle was the perfect choice or not is irrelevant. You know, the search was like every other search that he's done. And our Regents absolutely despise that. And so, I
agree. I mean, I don't think even an open process is perfect when you've got somebody you want, you know, I mean, that's a fake search, right? That's a fake search. That's a fake search for the provost. That's a fake search for dean of business. It's a fake search for dean of arts and sciences that's going on now. It's a fake search for graduate dean. We've had nothing but fake searches here, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the legacy. And I mean, you could go on down the ranks of where there haven't even been searches. And I've been the beneficiary of that. He announced, you know, that there would be no search for my position after, you know, we got to know each other and he guess he was happy with my job. And then he just decided on his own. I was fully prepared to have to compete for my job. And I think I would have won. I mean, cause I'm, you know, confident that way. And I would have applied and I would have been happy to go out in public and say, I want your job. You know, I mean, I think I get what you're saying. I really do. I think you're getting what I'm saying too. The problem is where do we find that middle ground? And I think the hitching point is always going to be, for me, it seems that you all are very worried about certain candidates that will withdraw from a search if they're made public in that final stage. And I am just willing to take that risk because to me, there are a lot of excellent leaders out there. There are a lot of wonderful people that can do this job. That's not just one or two. It's not just, you know, this person or that person. There are a lot of great people that could do this job. Not, you know, 1,000, but there are a good number. And the ones that want it, that want to step out in the sunshine and say, I want your job and I'm willing to take whatever risk I have to take, then that's the leader I want. Yeah. That's the leader I want.
Well, and I you know, I like that a lot. I think, Suzette, you know, I would love to have a dialogue with you as we work our way through the process and see if there's not some middle ground that I can champion with our board as we're working through this. I think what we're doing is very difficult, and I think there are 1,000 ways to screw it up, and I don't want the new person mm-hmm. to walk in on day one and have a faculty that says, since we didn't get to spend a month with you, we don't support you. I want to give the person the best shot that I can for them to be successful. And And I know you do too.
Yes. And I'm just going to say this. Yes, there are 1,000 ways to screw it up, but not all those 1,000 ways are equal. And the one way to really potentially screw it up is to keep it completely secret. I'm convinced. I know. I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm telling you, Rinzai, there were tons of people that would not sign that open letter. I got emails and text messages and comments privately from around the country, from people that left here because they couldn't stand the culture, from students that felt like they couldn't speak up, from staff members that are terrified because they don't have tenure, from untenured faculty members who were afraid to speak up, from alums, from donors, across the board, private support for this effort. This is much bigger than I think you all think it is.
It's
tough.
Reflective. It's reflective of Bourne. I mean, it's
yes,
reflective
exactly.
of his leadership.
Exactly.
And if I could tell you anything, you have 6 regents. We used to have 7.
Yeah.
Who are the reason that he's not staying.
We all know that. We all know that.
And so we recognize to a person that it is time to do it differently. And it is time to get fresh blood. And there are some great things that the man accomplished, but he stayed too long. And so we recognize that. And we are aligned and on the same page on helping move him to the next phase of his life and get a new person in and help him not taint the new person when the new person comes in.
Right.
And I can assure you, it is not his decision, nor, you know, we certainly will pay respect to him, but it is certainly not his decision who it is, nor does he have a voice that's going to be of any real consequence in how the final decision is made. And so the type of what I just heard from you is reflective of how we feel too. And so we know that it's a disaster in a lot of ways. We know that there is all sorts of morale issues. You know, we are aware of a lot of these things. I'm sure not to the extent that you are, and I'm not supposing we are, but if you and I can keep an open dialogue, you know, it's real easy to look at the Regents as, you know, 6 rich guys and girls that the governor appointed because of some political favoritism who may have their own interest in who they hire. And maybe they're just going to hire whoever David wants them to hire. And maybe we don't really, you know, and we that is not what we're doing. And I can, one other just kind of maybe final comment about it, you know, Clay Bennett, who is our chair, I cannot tell you how impressed I am with him and his leadership style and his demand for good governance and process. And although it's not as open at this stage as you would like, and I understand that a lot of that is debatable, and I respect and understand your concerns, and we'll convey it to the rest of our board when we meet on March the 7th. I can tell you he is an excellent leader, and he has got us pointed, I think, the right direction. and I want you guys to feel good about it whenever we get to the end. I hope we can keep an open dialogue about it.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do that. And again, thank you for listening. You know, I don't think that we'd really be having this conversation if it hadn't been a public comment at first, because, I mean, again, I cannot reiterate enough that these things compound, they grow exponentially. And when you've had this culture that you've had here for as long as you've had it, and you've had secret things, you know, that just get launched on you, and you have fake this and that happen, and then you see that compounded with, you know, 5 vice presidents that get, you know, special treatment, and then you compound that with the fact that there's a lot of, you know, donor money lining up, and particularly, you know,
connected to, you know, one family. You know, when you've got a member of the board and the chair of the search, you know, and the vice chair representing a college with that name on it. I mean, people start to, you can say to them all day long, we want what you want. But when they see all of that and they've lived through what they've been living through and they've seen what's happened here, it's going to be really hard for them to believe you. Right. It's just going to be really hard for them to believe you. And unless there's a willingness to open up to them at least a little bit. And that's, again, you know, in that final stage, to not just hand us our next president, but to have some sort of open process, then I think, you know, people are just going to see it as another, just one more thing. Just one more thing. And people are leaving. They're still leaving. Everybody's on the market. People are leaving. You know, you're getting a huge drain of amazing talent and knowledge and institutional memory from this university because of it. And I hate to make it sound that dire, but it's true. You know, it's just true.
Well, you've heard my concerns. I've heard your concerns. It would be helpful for you to share with me, and that, you know, you can determine the best way to get it to me. You know, if you want to have it couriered over here or sent via mail, or emailed or texted or however you want to do it. You know, if you'll treat me as an accomplice who wants the same thing you do and wants to take into account all the stakeholders that I'm dealing with, and you wanted to suggest, here are some of the minimal steps that would help bring some more credibility to your search. And it's nothing we would put in writing in a community letter because it's not far enough, but it would at least show us that you heard us and you're listening. Man, I would, if you're willing to share that with me, I will look at it and see what I can do to talk to the rest, because, you know, like I said, I think you can argue a lot of sides on a lot of these issues, but I heard you, and it's clear that you're passionate about it. I know you're good at your job. I know you care about the university, and, you know, we both want the same thing. So
I know we do. And it is a matter of how we get there. I mean, I understand, but, you know, if there's anything I've learned at this place, and again, it's just from working in a public institution, is that process really matters. And I mean, I started my job as an outcome person. I'm like, you know, we need to get here. But I learned really quickly that if you don't pay attention to how you get there, you're doomed. It doesn't matter if you get there or not. Yeah. And so it's just from, you know, 20 years of working at this university and the many years before that in higher ed, that I see, you know, a train wreck that's about to happen if you don't, you know, think again or you know, alter a little bit. So, you know, Renzi, look, I love this place. I love the University of Oklahoma. I love this state. It's my home state. It's heartbreaking to me, and I mean, I'll get emotional even just talking about it. But it's heartbreaking to me that we are in this place that is sending people left and right away from here. And I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm thinking about it too, because I can't be a part of it, you know, anymore. I just can't. It's so, I think that was kind of like we've seen the last straw, and I think that was what really motivated, it kind of motivated the whole movement.
Yeah. Well, you have the change you're seeking is already underway. And so maybe we can be a part of it together and figure out how to get to the end in a positive way.
Well, I'd love that. I'd love it. So I'll definitely give some thought. I mean, to be honest, there are a few people I'd like to go speak to about a conversation, you know, because they've really been, I mean, again, this has been a collective effort. I have kind of gotten out in front on this just because I'm a dean. And there are some very, very smart and wonderful people that are involved in this conversation with me. And so we will kind of think about, you know, what kind of steps really have, like, kind of what's the bottom line? You know, what kind of steps really have to be taken to kind of salvage things, you know, as opposed to what, you know, the whole nine yards, I guess.
Well, I'm communicating to you as one regent, and I didn't tell anybody else I was calling you. I called you on my own. I didn't have, you know, I've been thinking about you a lot, but I haven't, you know, I didn't. This isn't a big planned call. I'm the one to call her.
Yeah.
I'm calling you on my own. And for us to work together on it, we have to be able to trust that we're trying to work on it. And so, you know, I want to be able to share with what you shared with me, and you can share that you and I talk, but I certainly am not representing the other five people.
No, of course. And again, I understand that and make that clear. You know, it goes both ways. I mean, we're on the same page about that.
Okay. All right. Well, look, have a great rest of the day. And I will look forward to hearing kind of your thoughts on it. And hopefully we can figure out something that works for everybody.
All right. Well, thank you, Renzi. I appreciate your time and your commitment to it.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.